Everybody had a really wonderful day. The last Mishnah in the second parak, so that's the eighth Mishnah, deals with a topic called Yohara. What Yohara really means is kind of halachic exhibitionism. When somebody is really doing things to generate an impression on the part of other people that he's, you know, very pious or she's very punctilious, and unfortunately it's not really the case that this is an example of them posturing, but it's not consistent with their religious personality. So when somebody takes on a chumrah, a stringency, as we'll see, it's not absolutely required by the halacha, then you have to ask the question, why exactly are they doing this? Are they doing this again? Is there the kind of person that very consistently behind closed doors, is always extremely careful about all of their actions, and really, as we say, hamachmir tabo alav bracha, in that case, they're deserving of a blessing, or are they trying to, in some sense, portray themselves to be something that they're really not? And like I say, it's a form of religious exhibitionism. That's the issue that's at stake with Yohara. So again, we talked about how Rabbi Gamliel, even though fundamentally, based on the pasuk, it's din d'oraisa, b'shivtecha b'veisecha, is prat lo'osek b'mitzvah, you're not obligated in kriyat shema, u'v'lechtecha v'derech, so we said that was tirda the mitzvah, when a person is preoccupied. So when you have a new bridegroom, he's not obligated in kriyat shema, we said, up to and including four nights, because he's involved in the mitzvah of piriyah v'rivya, and that's sufficient grounds. Rabbi Gamliel recited kriyat shema, and the students asked him, but aren't you exempted? And he said, I will not listen to you as you try to take away, so to speak, my ability to accept the sovereignty of heaven even for a moment. And we spoke at the time that Rabbi Gamliel was Rabbi Gamliel. He was the head of the Sanhedrin. For him, it was something, you know, fundamentally painful not to be able to do Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. Just like for Gamliel, in the opposite direction, he was lenient on himself when it came to showering the night after his wife passed away, to bathing, because that was painful for him as well. And the halacha is you're not supposed to have bathing of enjoyment, rechitza shel tanug, but there's absolutely nothing wrong if a person is really feeling psychologically distressed to wash. So the Mishnah really picks up on that point. Chasan im rotza likros kriyat shema laila harishon kori. So just like Rabbi Gamliel did, presumably anybody would be able to do. So Rabbi Gamliel omer lo kol rotza litol as Hashem yitol. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is choshesh. She's concerned about Yohara. It's one thing for Rabbi Gamliel to do it, but it's another thing, you know, for just about anybody to do it, because it doesn't look appropriate. So the Rambam actually, in this case, rules according to in accordance with the Tanakhama, with the Chachamim, and says, as long as a person isn't distracted, they theoretically can be stringent, they can be machmir on themselves as far as the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema is concerned. Now, in terms of practical halacha, the way that this plays out, the Balei Tosfos point out that, ironically, it would almost seem like yohara, it would seem like arrogance for a person not to recite Kriyat Shema. How is that the case? Aren't you exempted from it? Because what you'd be saying implicitly is, tonight, the night of my wedding, there's no way I'm going to have kavana. But every other night of the year, you can be absolutely sure that I have all the proper kavana. You know, when it comes to Kriyat Shema, Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Shamayim U'Ba'aretz U'Vadal Ruchos, in the heaven, the earth, and to the four corners of the earth. And so this one night I'm not able to. So it's like a reverse Yohara. So in practice, the Balei Tosfos says it's, you know, our minhag, that people, even on the night of their wedding, they would recite Kriyat Shema, because again, you don't want to give the impression that in general, you know, you're so careful, and this is the only night when you're not going to be so careful. So already 1,000 years ago, the Balei Tosfos said, you know, we're not in a situation anymore when people can be held to the standard where it's expected that they have absolute kavana for Kriyat Shema every night of the year, and the only exception is, let's say, the night of their wedding. Now, the Gemara presents a very fascinating dilemma, because the way that it's set up here is that the Chachamim were not concerned about Yohara. They said if a person wants to be stringent and to recite Kriyat Shema, they may do so, even though they're not fundamentally obligated. And we're not concerned that this is like an act of religious exhibitionism. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one that says, wait a second, you know, if you're Rabbi Gamliel, it's one thing, but for the average person to do this, this really seems like it's not appropriate, because there's exactly the same machlokas, but in the opposite direction when it comes to the laws of Tisha B'Av. The Gemara Masechta Pesachim discusses makom shenagud, a different minhagim in various places. So, generally speaking, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, there isn't a formal Isser Malacha. It's not like Shabbos or Yontif or even like Chol HaMoed, but just like Purim, where the Gemara says that a person who does Malacha is not going to see a Siman Bracha, it's not going to be beneficial for them to do Malacha, so you have that in Tisha B'Av. So there are different practices in different places. Some places had a minhag not to do malacha on Tisha B'Av. Some places had a minhag that they could do malacha
on Tisha B'Av, especially when it came to after Chatzos. So the machlokas there between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is in exactly the opposite direction. So the Chachamim say, you know, basically a person has to follow whatever the minhag of their location is. And so if it's a place where people do malacha, if a person says, oh, well, I'm not going to do malacha, that would be an example of yohara. That would be religious exhibitionism. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, everybody should take it on themselves not to do malacha. Everybody should conduct themselves as a Tanakhama. So how do you figure this out? So the Gemara says, maybe we got it backwards. Maybe really the positions there are reversed. Maybe it was the Chachamim who took the opposite position. The Chachamim said, no, anybody who wants to conduct themselves as a Talmud Chacham, as somebody on a higher level, can do so. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said, you should just follow the minhag of your place. So that's one answer in the Gemara. The second answer in the Gemara is that you have to look at differences between the cases. That really it's not a problem for the rabbis, because the rabbis are saying here, if a person wants to say Kriyat Shema with everybody else, let them say Kriyat Shema with everybody else. And there the rabbis are saying, so do whatever the minhag of the town is. So they're fundamentally being consistent. And likewise, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is fundamentally being consistent, because it comes to Kriyat Shema, the general belief is that Anan Sahadeh, we have a general presumption that a person is not going to be able to focus. And there, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel said it would be Yohara, it would be religious exhibitionism for a person to say, I'm different, I'm able somehow to focus. But there, in the case of Malach on Tisha B'Av, nobody's even going to realize that he's doing anything outside of the norm. Because everybody's doing malacha, and he's not doing malacha, he's not doing work, they're just going to say he's lazy. They're not going to draw any conclusions about his religious standards. They're not going to say, you know, oh, this guy thinks he's so special. They're just going to say, kama batlani ika bishuk. That's literally the quote from the Gemara. There are plenty of lazy people around, so they're not even going to realize that he's doing anything for religious reasons. So that's the solution that's presented by the Gemara to this dilemma. So I wanted to suggest maybe a third approach, another reason to be mechalik, to draw a distinction between the laws of Tisha B'Av and when it comes to Kriyat Shema. So Kriyat Shema, as we've noted many, many times here, as we come to the end of the second chapter, is basically a verbalization of some kind of an internal recognition that God is the master of the universe. What we call, again, Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemaim. And that, again, requires a very substantial amount of intent for a person to contemplate his or her position in the world, to contemplate the world itself, to contemplate God's creation of the world, and that really does require a lot of focus. So a person to say, oh, no big deal, yeah, it's true, tonight's my wedding night, but I'm able to do that, in a certain sense, that becomes like a real act of gaiva. There's something very arrogant about that. For a person to think that no matter what else is going on in their lives, that they're, you know, able to focus at this very high level to perform this mitzvah that requires, you know, absolute kavana, that really is yohara. But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, and a person says, you know what, today I don't want to treat it like a regular work day. Even after Chatzos, I don't want to do malacha, because I want to identify with the historical suffering of the Jewish people, they're not making nearly as big a religious statement about themselves. They're not claiming, you know, to be some, you know, religious elite. All they're saying is, you know what, Jewish people suffered a lot on this day, and I want to identify with the suffering of the Jewish people. On the contrary, they're not separating themselves. They're not saying, you know, I'm so special, you know, I'm so religiously dedicated, I'm able to focus and to be mekabel ol malchus shamayim, even when there are many other things going on in my life. On the contrary, they're saying, I want to be a part of the people. I want to identify with the suffering of the Jewish people. So rather than separating themselves or placing themselves, God forbid, above everybody else, being Porish Minat Zibor in that sense of the term, on the contrary, what they're really doing is they're saying, B'toch Ami Anochi Yoshavet, I want to identify with the suffering of the Jewish people. That's not arrogance. On the contrary, that's very laudable. And so we could perhaps draw that distinction between Kriyat Shema, Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, and not doing Malachan. Okay, so Dr. Resnick asked an amazing question. This is while we're waiting for people to come in. So Dr. Resnick is pointing out that the time period between the passing of an immediate relative and the burial is called the period of Aninus. And during that time period, the Mishnah says, Pater mikol mitzvos amuros b'Torah. You're exempted from all of the mitzvos that are in the Torah. So there's a machlokas. Your question is a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Amazing. So most of the Rishonim are on the side of Tosfos that a person really isn't allowed, is not allowed to do
a regular mitzvah. You know why? Because it's what we call a bizoy hames. What you're saying is, okay, so my immediate relative died, but hey, I can go on, you know, this doesn't impact me too much, I can balance, I can multitask. No, that's a terrible thing. You should be focused on taking care of the funeral arrangements, and even in a broader sense, even if you weren't the one directly involved in the funeral arrangements, right, this should really be what's on your mind, is the loss, the fact that your world has changed forever. Now, Rashi takes the opposite approach. Rashi says, no, the halacha gives you a dispensation. The halacha says, we want you to be able to focus on, let's say, the funeral arrangements, so on and so forth. So we're not going to obligate you in Kriyat Shema and Tefillah and Tefillah and Kol Mitzvah Samuras B'Torah. But if a person feels that they're able to, that's exactly what Rashi says, they would be able to do so. What your question is exactly a machlokas between Rashi and Tosos. Actually, we're going to get to it starting tomorrow, and we deal with the beginning of the third parak, Misha Meso Mutalafanav. Now, there's a third way of looking at that, again, since we have a little bit of extra time, is maybe it matters who you are in terms of what the relational scale is. So this comes up again in Tosos. This is the position of Rabbeinu Tam. Again, practically speaking, we don't follow this so much, but Rabbeinu Tam lost his sister, and his sister lived in a different town, and we're living in a different world today in terms of the transportation and the connections and the ability for people to be in constant contact with each other, so on and so forth. So if you lived in a different town 1,000 years ago in, you know, medieval France, so that meant that you were not going to be directly involved. So Rabbeinu Tam, when he got word that his sister had passed away, you know, his sister was famous because she was the mother of one of the great Balei HaTosfos, the Ri, who was the primary student of Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam felt that the principles of Aninos didn't apply to him at all, because he wasn't the one who was going to be directly involved in the funeral arrangements altogether. So again, you could sort of take a middle position and say, well, maybe it depends, right? Maybe, you know, Rashi and Tosfos' position depends on where exactly you are. So if you're the one who's primarily responsible, maybe we should say it should be categorically prohibited for you, you know, to involve yourself in mitzvos, because that would be, eo ipso, neglecting the mace itself. Whereas if you're more peripheral, doesn't mean that you're not an immediate relative, right? Because the halacha of aninus only applies to immediate relative. But let's say if you're not the spouse or the child, you're a sibling. Again, we're not demeaning the sibling, but we're saying that their role in a practical sense might be much less direct than those who are actually making the funeral arrangements. They're obviously going to go, they're going to have the status of avelos just the same, but the bottom line is that their position in a practical sense is different. You might argue there that it would be their option, that it would, you know, depend on what exactly they were feeling. And practical from a